Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And all day long.
All day long.
The sponsor is?
Pape Machinery.
Da, 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 da.
Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located in Shasta Lake City. Go up there and see them if you're looking for tractors, implements, lawn care products, steel, Honda. They got it all going on up there. Pretty good inventory right now. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, and you can get them on the phone at 226-9226 or online at papemachinery.com. So there you go.
And on behalf of Pape Machinery, I'd like to thank the Sheriff's Office, especially the guys that are detailed to Shasta Lake City.
Yes, we keep them on the payroll up there. We have some night visitors every once in a while that like to come up and shop for discounts.
Yes.
But listen, we got them under control. And
the five-finger discount is no longer allowed.
Nope, it's not available.
For those of you who are old enough to know what that means.
Yeah.
And and you know what? Honestly, if you can't control yourself, at least do it during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning is not...
people out of bed.
Yeah, don't. That's just rude.
It is, too.
It is rude.
One day you'll catch someone and you throw the book at them.
Yeah. Throw the takedown.
And throw the book at them. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah.
Awful, Andy. Just awful.
You would have been a great sheriff's deputy.
That's right.
I can see it now. You would have been Barney One Bullet. They would have been, I want to roll with Barney One Bullet tonight.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. Well, so the week that was, nothing noteworthy other than probably the Equality Act. So here's a little free information that the media won't tell you. Please go to congress.gov. It is the Congressional Record site. It is not a Democrat site. It's not a Republican site. It is just the record of what happens with legislation. So when you hear about a bill that is of interest to you, whether it's great or whether it's terrible, go to congress.gov and look it up, provided it's federal. And so you look up like H.R. 5 or H.R. 1 or whatever, and you can see right there on the little dashboard what the co-sponsors look like, who sponsored the bill, what kind of committee work has to be done, where it's going to go. You can actually sign up for alerts so you can follow the bill, the actual happenings of the bill. And you can tell from that, you can tell whether or not it's going to probably go through the Senate. Look at related bills. If you don't see anything on the Senate side, might want to stave off the panic. But at the very least, give your member of the House a call. If that's where it's starting, give them a call and just ask them, hey, what's going on with this bill? Is it going anywhere? So before you go crazy and call and scream at them, just call and ask, is it going anywhere? And they can give you a pretty good indicator. We should only worry about things that we should worry about. The rest of it, we should let that go. Right now, it's very fashionable. The legislation that's going through is, they call them messaging bills, actually. And the message is to their own guys, oh my gosh, aren't we awesome? We just passed some crazy thing that you all love. And the message to the other guys is, your life sucks. We're going to trounce you, and we're going to ruin your life, and America as we know it is now gone. It's an easy message. Like that picture in your mom's bathroom, Bill. You know, the guy with the little stick and the parcel over his shoulder.
Oh, yeah, with a fork in the road.
Yeah, yeah, the road less traveled.
That's right.
So it only goes...
The road no longer an option.
Oh, God, that's right. That's what we never had the heart to ask what that was about. Just double check. Make sure that it's truly coming. But on the other hand, the messaging bills, those are also a clue. They function as clues because that means that's stuff they really do want to do, and it may come back in a different form or fashion in the future. So it is kind of worth getting smart about it. But I'm not big on panic, so hold on to your panic until you make sure it's real. And what's happening? I opened up the pneumonia hole in here. It's getting colder. it was stuffy when we got in. All right. Well, I'm gonna introduce Elaine. Are you playing with the thermostat? Yep. Playing with the thermostat. All right. On to Elaine, who is on the phone with us. Elaine Willman, we have not had on the show for 4 years. I could not believe it. I had to keep scrolling back farther and farther and farther and farther to find her last program with us. And I'm so bad, I didn't even realize she wrote a new book last year until I was talking to somebody else, and they said, well, hey, you should have her on. She just wrote a new book, actually. That's what I was told. And then I went on Amazon. I'm like, oh, my God, it was a year ago. So she has a really interesting insight on what goes on with policy related. This whole place is good. It's like Three Stooges radio. Steve Edge can't see it all. Robert's working on our puffy things on the wall there. All right, there. I think we got it. Good Lord.
Eggshells were egg cartons are coming down.
Exactly. The fluffy things. So Elaine Willman is the author of Going to Pieces, The Dismantling of the United States of America. I really think you would like this book. She also has them out in Kindle and everything. I've put links on the site, which is wethepeopleradio.us, by the way, if you want to follow along or send us notes or phone calls or whatever. The book reports first-person visits and experiences of tribal members and citizens residing on or near 17 different Indian reservations. She took a road trip across the country from Washington State to New York State, which is basically across the country. There's not much left. And her book is awesome. I think you'll really like it. I have not read the newest one, and that was kind of what we were going to talk about. But her second one was called Slumbering Thunder, a primer for confronting the spread of federal Indian policy and tribalism that's overwhelming America. And interestingly enough, I think that actually we see a lot of some of the policy things I alluded to earlier, like H.R. 5. That kind of policy is creating an element of tribalism as well. So we're all going to have to, you know, I don't know, we can't get our stars like the Sneetches because they've been banned, but I guess we'll have to get some sort of demarcation to know what tribe we're in ultimately, even outside of this policy. So Elaine, we've got like a minute or two until our break, but and then we'll talk nothing about, you know, nothing except your book. But what do you want to tell people for, like, a setup on this thing?
Well, Aaron, first, thanks, and it's just great to connect with you again.
I know. I could not believe it had been 4 years.
I know, but I think it's been a crazy 4 years for all of us in the country, of course.
And, that's true.
And so time flies. So it's really delightful to be with you, and I do want to talk about the book, of course, but I also want to talk about some broader issues, too, that are affecting us all today. So let's just kind of freewheel. What do you think?
Absolutely. And I kind of didn't say it, but the book is called American Tribal Tyranny, How Federal Indian Policy Secretly Monies Up Elected Officials, Forcing American Taxpayers to Fund All Annual Operating Needs of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And so I guess if you're thinking, well, I don't live anywhere near an Indian reservation, I don't think this is going to affect me. Bottom line is, if you live in the country and you're a taxpayer, that's where it's affecting you.
Yeah, it funds not only that behemoth federal agency, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, it annually funds all the basic needs of 576 tribal governments, too. So that's a huge chunk of taxpayer dollars, probably equivalent to the military funding that the taxpayers are paying without actually knowing about it. Most folks have not been on reservations. And, of course, the two coastal populations probably only think of Indian casinos, and they don't realize just how much of the taxpayer dollar is removing a republic form of government in the various states and converting it to tribalism or culture, you know, collectivism. And that, and this is why I want to talk about other things too.
Sure.
This tribalism and this spread of collectivism is now being parroted or, you know, picked up by other cultures and other groups who think, well, Indians can do their thing, we can do our thing, and there you go. We're losing less and less of our republic form of government to collectivism.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and that moves me.
And it's always done in a way that either you can't, because most people couldn't have an intelligent conversation about this, not because they're not intelligent, but because this is stuff we just don't know a lot about. If you live if you live in an area, that's how I first got connected with Elaine. Was she was up in Montana near the Flathead Reservation, or on the Flathead Reservation, and when it comes to water policy, and tribes, there's a lot of impact to local communities, local counties, and local taxpayers. Good and bad. I mean, depends on where you live and what's going on, but it is a factor. So we need to take a really quick break. We'll come right back with our guest, Elaine Willman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Rest assured, don't get your money's worth. We're the show.
We don't really want to make your head blow apart. We're going to do our level best to inject a little fun or something, because it seems like everything these days is designed to make your head blow apart. So, you know, we should talk a little bit about your background, Elaine, before we get going.
Well, as a background, I was like you and most folks in the country. I knew nothing about Indian reservations or anything like that, having lived down in Southern California, Ventura County, Ojai, for 15 years before moving up to Washington State. And when I took a position with a little city in Washington State, it was in the middle of the Yakima Indian Reservation. And I was thinking, because I am Cherokee and my husband is Shoshone, I was thinking, oh, hooray, I get to live on a real Indian reservation, and very excited to do that. And so that was the beginning of my information and education on Indian policy and interaction, you know, between local governments and tribal governments. I lived on the Yakima Reservation for 16 years. Then I took a position with a wonderful community in Wisconsin, which happened to be on the Oneida Indian Reservation, and I was there for 8 years. And then folks here in western Montana were in a huge water battle with the federal government and the tribe, where the state of Montana was, and it currently is, willing to give all of its state waters in western Montana, all those counties that border Idaho, is going to give all of its state waters to the federal government in trust for one little tribe to control all of the waters in western Montana. And so folks in Montana invited me out to help them fight that little fight. And by my second or third visit out here, I thought, I have to get in the middle of this. And my family was willing to move, so we moved out to the middle of nowhere, Montana. I like to say that the Beverly Hillbillies moved to the little house on the prairie, because we live out in this beautiful, beautiful valley between the Rockies. There's only one other rooftop in the whole valley. So it was quite a life change, but we just love it. And there's wonderful people out here. So I've been on this reservation for 6 years. I think I've lived on Indian reservations for the past almost 30 years. And many of, if not most of our friends are tribal families and such as that. So my research is, on behalf of tribal members who have no voice with their tribal governments, and it's all focused on congressional acts, judicial rulings, federal agency regulations. It's all on policy. It has, because I have a tremendous affection for the American Indian culture. It's my own ancestry, it's my own culture, and I really value the culture and the traditions of tribal families and Indian culture, but they are truly held kind of captive by a tribal government that does not afford them with their constitutional rights or any such thing. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. I try to speak on behalf of tribal members and non-Indians. Almost all of the Indian reservations are overwhelmingly populated by non-Indians. So that's kind of some background. And then I wrote, as you mentioned, the Going to Pieces book in 2005 from that wacky road trip I took with a big videographer from Washington to New York. And that book continues to be a really good seller. And the Slumbering Thunder book was a collection of my experiences working with the various local governments in conflict or collaboration with tribal governments. And I really hadn't planned to do a third book until something came across that just enraged me. I don't watch CNN. I will
unless you want to be enraged.
Most people don't, yeah. Elaine.
I will cop to being a strong conservative. So there for a while, I was a strict Fox News viewer. And on Fox News, they ran a CNN clip. And it was a clip about this. This was a few years ago. 3 years ago, I think it was. No, 2 years ago. And this clip had this handsome Navajo chairman, tribal chairman, Russell Begay. Handsome, marvelous Indian face and shoulder shot on CNN. And mind you, CNN is in every airport in the world.
True.
And this Indian leader is on CNN, and his statement was, all of America is Indian country, and every non-Indian is a guest and should act like it.
Oh.
And he said that. He said that. And I backed it up and watched it again to make sure I heard him right. All of America is Indian country, and every non-Indian is a guest and should act like it. I just went ballistic, blind rage. I had to settle down for 2 weeks before I could even confront it rationally. You know what I mean? So, and that's when I thought, by God, I'm writing another book. And so the first, that's the American Tribal Tyranny book, the new one. And the first chapter is my open letter to Russell Begay, letting him know exactly what I think about his comments on CNN. And this third book, I wrote in a very different style than the other two. I wanted to keep it extremely simple. There's no big words in it. I don't have a lot of annotations or stuff like that. But I wanted to keep it simple and absolutely clearly define what federal Indian policy is and how tremendously unconstitutional and illegal it all always has been. So that was the American Tribal Tyranny book. And because, I don't know if it's because I put simple language in it and spoke very snarky and queer, or whether it also had pictures in it. I don't know why, but this book is really selling. I mean, I've had a fellow put up 2 billboards along major highways here in Montana with the cover of my book on it. And one fellow ordered 500 copies, and I've had lots of bulk orders for 150 copies. And it's really selling, bigger than the first two, which tickles me to death. Because of my whole point is to educate people that don't live on reservations. The taxpayers that are subjected to this, we're truly indentured servants. Every taxpayer is an indentured servant to this system we had nothing to do with, and this system that is totally authorized under a War Powers Act, which may not be implemented in states, but has been since the 1830s. It's a completely unconstitutional, illegal system that, a national organization that I belong to has been researching this for 20 years, the War Powers Act specifically. And we finally have it confronted in a court case up in front of the Supreme Court right now, a case called U.S. v. Cooley, C-O-O-L-E-Y. So that's kind of big picture. I've just been, I don't know why I cannot not do this. I don't know why it's so important to me. I've been focused on federal Indian policy, as I said, for about 30 years. but I think it's because it is so far apart from our Constitution, what our founders intended, mm-hmm. and the spread of collectivism instead of individual responsibility and individual liberty and aspiration.
What's the overall reception for your books with, let's say, the majority of the tribal members that you've talked to? Are they pretty much behind what you're doing or not?
The tribal members appreciate them. Mm-hmm. And we have long conversations. As I said, I try to speak on their behalf because they dare not speak up for themselves in these
right.
tribal governments. The tribal governments are not fond of me at all.
No, I wouldn't think so.
The National Congress of American Indians and several Indian organizations, political organizations and lobbyists and whatnot, they call me every name in the book, and they have for all these years, but I don't care what they call me.
Well, I think that, like, when you came on with us a long time ago, because I speak with people all the time who, say, took a job at a casino that's on uh-huh. tribal ground, and they're shocked that they don't have the full protections, basically, of the Constitution. It's like the
their working conditions and all that are not covered under.
Sometimes it's great
labor laws.
I mean, we have local establishments here that are great. People really like them. They like working for them. But then there are other ones that aren't great. And the problem is your recourse is pretty much zero.
And that's a good point, Aaron, because some of the tribal governments are very decent with their people and run wonderful businesses. There are exceptions to this, absolutely. But predominantly, they're really brutal on their people and customers at a lot of these casinos are not aware that if they're, if they're on federal trust land, and their car's in a parking lot and gets vandalized or they slip and fall someplace, they have no protections on that federal trust land. And in those all-you-can-eat casinos, a very few of them are subject to food inspections or state food inspections. And so you're at your own risk when you're in a tribal business or on a tribal property, and a lot of folks don't know that they certainly don't advertise that
well. And what you had I've listed the shows, the previous shows we did with you, and I do hope people will go back and listen, because we're not going to obviously retread all of that, but what you discovered was that members of the tribe basically forfeited their constitutional rights as Americans by living on the reservation. They were under the control of the tribal government, and I never forgot it. It was years ago, and yet I remember when you told us that if they vote against the wrong tribal council people, they can mm-hmm. take their children away. They could do all sorts of things, and they have no. Their complaints go right back to the people who are orchestrating that.
Yes, and I think part of the problem is that these congressional acts that have been put into place on behalf of tribal governments are made by the folks back in Washington, D.C., and I would venture that over the last century or two, very few of those elected officials in D.C. and Congress have ventured out across the country or even been on the reservation. But there are lobbyists, tribal lobbyists, that get in there, and one of the most egregious things Congress did
hold that thought, because we'll have questions. But my engineer is ready to he's tying a noose in there right now because I blew right by the break time, and Bill of course is Bill of course is doing his own show over
here. I'm holding, but it's important. All
right. Oh my gosh, we'll be right back. Our guest is Elaine Willman. She is the author of, and I just moved my cursor off of it, American Tribal Tyranny. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Ready for clothes. Oh, Mississippi, that she's calling my name. Catfish are jumping, that paddle wheel bumping. Black water keep rolling on fast, just the same.
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining?
Moon horizon.
We're back. All right, Elaine. Sorry. Finish that thought.
Well, speaking of one of the worst bills Congress or acts that Congress ever passed, and that was the Indian Child Welfare Act. I love how these acts have these marvelous titles and they're just the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but yeah. Lobbyists, that's trademark.
Lobbyists, yeah, like we have the Montana Water Protection Act, which is giving all our Montana waters to a tribe. And not protecting anybody in Montana. But anyway, the Indian Child Welfare Act, because of a whole bunch of tribal lobbyists going into Congress and wringing their hands and saying, my people, your state adoption agencies are allowing Indian children to be adopted by non-Indian parents, and we're losing our culture. So the Congress gives them the Indian Child Welfare Act, which transferred all full parental rights from a tribal parent to the tribal government. And so our enrolled tribal members across the country do not have parental rights over their children 18 and under. Their tribal government does. And that was what Congress's way of helping the tribal government protect its culture. So, and that is weaponized by tribal governments to keep their members in line. For example, when I first moved out here in 2016, I attended a hearing in the state legislature in Helena, and a couple of tribal fellows stood up to the microphone. The hearing was about the transfer of a major hydropower dam from the state to the tribe, the federal government and the tribe. And a couple of Indian fellows stood up at the microphone, and they both said, do not give this dam to our tribe. They do not have the experience. They will not do right. Do not do that. And a couple days later, they got knocks on their doors from the Tribal Child Protective Services saying, you're a bad parent. We're taking your children. And they took three girls from one family, and the other fellow was a grandfather who had full custody of his two grandsons. They took those boys from him. And the family that lost the three girls, it took almost 3 years for them to get two of the girls back, and they are still, and this was in 2016, they are still trying to get their third daughter back. And the grandfather who lost his grandsons still does not have his children back.
And do they just place them wherever they want?
They place them with other families, but the parents don't necessarily know the other families, or even if they do, it's too bad. They just remove them from the family and place them in another tribal family. And that's the way it goes. So that's what happens when you speak up against a tribal government decision. If you're an enrolled tribal member, it comes with retaliation of some kind. Wow. And my way of thinking, removing a child is the worst. But it can be the loss of a job, or the loss of housing, it can be any number, it can be shunning or whatever they do. The retaliation is wide-ranging. So, and Congress made that possible. You know, and these are, as Aaron mentioned, enrolled tribal members are full American citizens like you and me. They have all the same constitutional rights as you and I until they are enrolled. And they're subject to their tribal government, then they lose their constitutional rights, their unalienable rights. They lose free speech. They lose it all under that government. And consequently, about 4 out of 5 American Indians have left the reservations and disenrolled, and they have nothing to do. Your Indian reservations are pretty small in population. This is a pretty good Flathead where I live, Indian reservation, a pretty good sized reservation, and it only has 5,000 enrolled tribal members here, where we have like 35,000 non-Indians that live on this reservation.
That seems kind of telling.
The Cherokees are huge. You know, there's 300,000 or something like that. But most of your tribal populations are very small, very small, but huge governments.
And what kind of control do they have over the people who are not enrolled tribal members who live on the reservation?
They're supposed to have none. They have none.
Okay.
Tribal government. We have a big Montana Supreme. The U.S. Supreme Court case is a landmark case that came out of Montana, that tribal governments have no authority whatsoever over non-Indians or non-Indian properties or persons. Or properties are, they have no authority over non-Indians whatsoever, period. But when you live within the boundaries of an Indian reservation, the tribal governments will bully. They'll pretend they do, or they'll throw something at you that makes you think they do. And if you haven't educated yourself and comply, then you have agreed to let them govern you. For example, if one signs an agreement or any kind of a consent, any kind of document with a tribal government, if you're a non-Indian and you sign some form of agreement, like a vendor might or anybody else might, the moment you sign a document with a tribal government, you have subjected yourself to be governed by that tribal government and can be called into their tribal court. You won't be able to bring in your own attorney. You can only bring in the limited attorneys that they allow to practice in their court. And you won't be given, you know, due process. The tribal courts are largely kangaroo. So I always like to tell non-Indians, be careful about signing anything with a tribal government or a tribal business, because that can trap you.
Yeah, you could be giving up more than you planned on.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
And so, why? What's the? I mean, there are always multiple motives for this kind of stuff, but it's, you know, well, almost the, always power and control.
The tribal governments have, they claim a sovereignty. Now it's a quasi, what we call a quasi-dependent sovereignty. Their sovereignty is an extension of the federal government's sovereignty. It isn't a clear and separate sovereignty, but they like to think it is and act like it is. And behind their sovereign principles, their governing authority, they tend to embellish and expand that at every single opportunity. And so one has to be mindful of that. That's how they grow their land base. Actually, you know, the bigger picture is that these tribal governments and Indian reservations are very willing pawns and tools of the federal government, which constantly is trying to expand its federal jurisdiction and federal footprint in states, removing state authority over its lands and natural resources and waters. So, you know, in the western states, there's already a ton of federal land in all the western states. But expanding, you know, when tribes buy land and place it into federal trust on their behalf, that's land that comes out of a state's tax base or a state's ability to generate revenue. These tribal governments are shrinking incrementally every year the authority of states over their lands and natural resources and economies and water. And that's just something that is continuously diminishing state lands and state sovereign authority that is not recoverable by states. And state legislators, who are dependent upon federal subsidies for their state budgets, are only too willing to just say, oh, okay. States are under a twofold pressure. One, they get a lot of federal subsidies, and so when the feds kind of push out on the state control, states cave, And the other thing is that since gaming came on in 1988 and in 2000, tribal governments can now, they're the only governments in the country that can cut checks to election, you know, elected officials, incumbents or candidates, and they do that in large number. They own Washington State. They own the governor's office, the state legislature. There's 31 tribes in little Washington State, and they money up those elected officials to do their bidding. They totally control Washington State.
So do they? So the reservations don't operate under the same campaign laws that everybody else does? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Right. And the way that happened was just before the Bush-Gore election in 2000, one tribe in New York, the Oneidas of New York, wrote a letter to the Federal Election Commission saying, may we participate financially in federal and state elections? And the FEC said, why, sure, to this one tribe. Well, then you have to treat all tribes the same. That immediately spread out to all tribes. And so you have 574 tribes in, I think, something like 28 states. And their casino money, which is free money because taxpayers fund all their basic needs, their casino money goes to buy legislators, land, lobbyists, lawyers. Their casino money helps them grow their voice. I mean, they're a very small population of America, but they have an enormous financial and political voice in D.C. And in your state capitals where there are Indian reservations.
Hmm. Yeah. I think it's really worth educating people on this because it's really something, unless you did a little bit of study, probably would not stumble across it. Or you live in a rural area and you're finding that your water policy and all that is super jammed up, and then you start realizing, hey, how'd the federal government get all that control? We have to take a really quick break. Our guest is Elaine Willman, and her book is American Tribal Tyranny. Thanks for joining us. You are listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
It ain't my time.
Meaning what they say now, and never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine. Whoa, la da 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 da. Talking about you.
And we're back.
All right. Are you back?
Yep.
Well, you guys have a great taste in music. I love your music that you put out.
We do what we can.
It's great. So, one thing I think that I'd like the folks to know is how one voice or two voices can make a difference and where this stuff all came from. And it goes back, you know, the original 13 colonies, every colony, and the states, the original 13 states, managed their entire population within their state, including their Indians. States managed the Indians. And then there were two men that grew up together in Virginia, two young men that grew up together, and they became political rivals. And one of them became President Andrew Jackson, a populist and a big states' rights guy. And the other one was Chief Justice John Marshall, who was the first and most prominent and probably longest-serving Chief Justice of our Supreme Court. And those two gentlemen were fierce adversaries. Marshall was a strong central government. He believed in a big, powerful federal central government, and Jackson believed in states' rights. So a situation came up in the state of Georgia around 1829 and 1830, where the Cherokee Nation informed the state of Georgia that it would manage its lands and its reservations, and Georgia had no authority on its Cherokee reservation. And the state of Georgia said, well, I don't think so. And President Andrew Jackson said, oh, hell no. And that caused, for better or for worse, mostly for worse, the Indian Removal Act, which removed the Indians west of the Mississippi. Marshall was infuriated, and Marshall actually did some things that Chief Justice would be impeached for. Marshall found some friends in Virginia and educated them on how to bring a case up to his court, in fact, several cases up to his court. And in 1830, in a case called Worcester v. Georgia, Chief Justice John Marshall ruled, and you could find nothing in our U.S. Constitution, so he used British international law. Marshall ruled that the federal government had a trust relationship with Indians. That's where this came from. That Marshall's ruling of Worcester v. Georgia in 1830, the federal government has a trust relationship with Indians. They are dependent wards of the federal government. And that was the origin that removed the states managing their Indian populations, took it away from the states, gave it to the federal government in trust. Well, Congress didn't know what to do with that, but they soon formed the Bureau of Indian Affairs under the Secretary of War then. And the Bureau of Indian Affairs, using the war powers, they needed the war powers. The lands in the western side of the Mississippi mostly were territories, but they needed the war powers to manage hostile Indians and even war powers during the Civil War and such. So all of Indian authority is founded under the war powers authority, which is applicable in territories, because residents in territories are not U.S. citizens, and the war powers is the controlling power in territories. But once land is formed into a state and becomes a state, the federal government cannot use war powers against the state. But that has continued with Indian policy. That is how the federal government, the Bureau, the BIA, has expanded Indian reservations and progressed all of this stuff across the country to the year 2021 under the War Powers Act.
Hmm. Why do you suppose nobody's ever challenged that? I mean, is it just precedent now, and that's why it's not challenged?
There's a whole bunch of reasons why it's not been challenged. And one would be economic, because as I said, in the western states, when they came to their statehood, a lot of them included a lot of federal land. You don't see that in the eastern states, but you see a lot of federal land in western states, even upon their statehood. And because of that, the states are given what they call payment in lieu of taxes. They're given federal subsidies, or PILT money, and the states rely on that for their budgets. So there's a monetary reason why states tend to acquiesce. And then there's also the political sensitivity that elected officials have. They really don't like to be called racist. And if you say no to any tribal desire, you're a racist. And so there's a lot of reasons why the states just don't cave. And more recently, the tribes buy the elected officials with their gaming money. They buy them. Mm. They own the governor's. They've owned the Washington governor's office since Governor Lowry. Oh, and here's the other thing that happened. The federal government has a trust relationship with Indians, but states do not. But Governor Lowry, Mike Lowry, back in 1989, which happened to be 1 year after the Gaming Act came in 1989, that was Washington State's centennial. And Governor Lowry created this centennial accord honoring the first 100 years of Washington State. And within that accord, he created a state trust relationship with Washington's tribes. and he set up state Indian offices in all the state agencies in Washington State. And that has been replicated by Montana and I think Oregon, several other states. So now these tribes are double dipping. They're getting federal dollars every year for their basic needs, and they're getting state dollars from the various state agencies too. But states legally have no trust relationship with the tribes. But they like that tribal campaign money.
Yeah. You know,
that's what's going on today.
See, and the hard part, too, the payment in lieu of taxes, not to gloss that over,
yeah.
That is a huge budgetary concern, especially like some of our counties here could be upwards of 60 to 70% public land. Well, when you do that, there's no property tax revenue. There's just all the things that go with private ownership. But the bad part is that because of the configuration of the country, you have a huge percentage of the representatives who don't really understand that anymore, and they've started looking at it like rural welfare, actually. So the Pilt battle every year is it gets pushed off farther and farther and farther, and then it always gets thrown in with something at the last minute. So
you gotta
watch those kinds of agreements, because over time they lose their meaning, and then you run the risk of winding up standing there, you know, getting like these guys in the movies, you handcuff themselves to the bed, and then, nothing good's going to happen from here.
Well, it goes back to the fundamentals in our Constitution, one of which is the federal government is required to timely dispose of its territories. Timely dispose of its territory, which caused, you know, all the formation of these states. Well, it did timely dispose of its territories in the eastern states, but it did not timely dispose of its territories in the western states. And so you get that little expansion where, well, we're just not going to do that over here, you know. And then there's another little teeny little phrase in the Constitution that says that the federal government has authority over Indian commerce. That's Indian commerce, because in the early days, the early 1800s, there were some shenanigans in bartering with Indians and unfair exchanges of beads or whatever. And so the founders put federal authority over Indian commerce in the Constitution. It didn't say authority over land or Indian jurisdiction over anything.
Hold that thought, Elaine. We're going to get cut off by the news, but we're going to come back and talk about this some more. Our guest is Elaine Willman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. If you're looking for a tractor or a mower or attachment, and it's green, go up and see them. They've got it all in stock up there. They're in Shasta Lake City at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And there you go.
Yeah, well, you might need a generator. They got generators in stock. They got you got to go trim your yard up, get a steel chainsaw, cut some trees. Go see them.
Wide variety of things. And if you broke it, take it up there and get it fixed.
Yep.
Don't call them on the phone, though, and try to get it fixed over the phone.
No.
There's some guy named Bill there. He gets really annoyed about that.
I heard he's kind of
an old codger when you make those calls.
A lot of times I forget to bring my crystal ball, and I just can't seem to get it done over the phone.
Could be a spark plug. No, it's not that.
Okay, well, I guess I don't know what it is. Boy.
Equipment business.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
I know. Yeah. I do my best.
Yeah, I know. You're here to help.
I got a little stash of stuff. It's like playing home on the range. Yeah. I love playing home on the range because I always get the what the hell look on your face.
It's yeah.
You play it every week.
You're from the government, and you're here to help.
That's like me. Yeah, that's what I do.
Yep. That's your magic.
Mm-hmm. So you can find everything about the show, actually, along with over 10 years of archives at wethepeopleradio.us. And if you're listening and you're like, these breaks are a pain, well, hey, free enterprise is a good thing, so we should celebrate it while we still have it before Bernie and the crowd gets a hold of it and strangles it to death. But,
well, yeah, but then they'll pay for everything, and we won't have to worry about
that's
sponsors
right. It'll be
and
so
all
much
that.
Better.
I know it.
Because it's really worked out well historically, as Elaine has so well.
And I'm sure the
eliminated.
First ones that'll get funded are the radio talk shows. They'll take care of
the
them
conservative
first.
Radio talk shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Make that distinction. Yeah, they'll make sure we stay on the air because God knows they love us. We take all the commercials out. Robert does. I say we. We like I have a mouse in my pocket. Robert here takes all the commercials out for us, and so you have commercial free archives that are just an MP3 file you can listen to whenever you want. Send it to a friend, burn it on a CD, sell it for your group, and raise money. We don't care what you do with it. We have no interest in copyright or going after you or anything like that. We do this as a public service. So, and if you don't think we're funny and you don't like our information, then well. You're always free to listen to something else. Which would be a politically correct way of saying we don't care. But we're always happy for suggestions. You can find all our info on the website. So our telephone numbers and email are right there. And so I guess that's all the information we want to share.
That's all you got?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Okay.
Elaine's got all her information on here, actually. Phone and email. I was assuming you wanted me to keep that on there.
Yes, I sent you something just today, Aaron.
Right.
It's an article called A Severely Wounded American Eagle. And it's actually the preface to the book, American Tribal Tyranny. I sent you that article, and I'm hoping you might post it.
I will do that right now.
Yeah, A Severely Wounded American Eagle. It is the actual preface to the book, American Tribal Tyranny. And I wanted to mention that the book is all over Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or any of your book websites. And if somebody wants a bulk order, they can simply email me and I can get them a reduced rate on bulk orders. But I would like to shift, if it's okay with you guys, to a controversial puzzle that I'm working through that I'm thinking about confronting with some writings. And you know, I like to be squeaky wheel or maybe the canary in the coal mine. And here's where I'm going. I'm going to start it with this puzzle. I'm going to give you four words, and you tell me which one is different. The first word is apartheid. The second word is slavery. The third word is diversity. And the fourth word is segregation. Apartheid, slavery, diversity, segregation. Which one is different?
I'm going to go with equity.
No, I didn't say that. that could be the fifth word. That's for sure.
I told her, I go, none of them?
Well, the answer I usually get is diversity is different. It is not. It is sugarcoating segregation. You know, apartheid, and in some cases, slavery. I kind of think that we have become a country that is being pitted one against the other based on skin color.
Yep.
And, you know, I call that skin deep thinking, which is really a way to take our country apart. And it's being promoted by major corporations, you know, nonprofit organizations and all these folks that say, well, my skin color is more important than yours. We are Americans. And my goal is that we somehow find a way to stop hyphenating us Americans. We're not Hispanic Americans or Black Americans and Native. We are Americans. And we just urgently need to restore back to that because that was the founding principle of our country. But it's all gone to this skin deep, shallow thinking for profit or for power, mm-hmm. you know? So what do you guys think about that?
No, I totally agree. I'm working to get somebody on to talk about this Equity Act stuff because at the base of that is basically just greed. And it's not something you see right away. Some of this stuff is pretty obvious. The whole thing is pretty transparent. But then you get looking at some of this other stuff and you go, well, that's really tricky. You know, like the transgender thing. Who would have thought? It was really all about profit. But the people who are pushing it and putting big money into it, they're the ones with the pharmaceutical companies, the surgery centers, all this kind of stuff. It's like, well, that's
big pharma.
Depressing.
It's a very tiny piece of our population. You know, the LGBT segment of our population is not very large.
The funny part is the L's, the G's, and the B's want out. They want to snip off the T's there and get them out of the mix because they're the ones messing everything up.
Yeah.
They've fought for men's rights and women's rights, and basically they're not confused about their sexuality.
No.
And now these other people have rolled in and taken over the whole thing and erased all the work. So women have no rights, men have no rights, nobody's got any rights. And you know, even moreover than that, the equity thing would actually enshrine in law thought crimes.
Yeah.
Because if you can decide what your gender is in your head and it has nothing to do with any outward anything, then... I mean, you would be committing a thought crime. And how do you defend yourself against that? Can't make laws about that.
Free speech has been under assault for quite a while now. And I really wish, one of the reasons I just think you've always stuck out in my mind, Aaron, is because even though we've not met in person, in times past when you and I have spoken on the phone and whatnot, you just come across as such a strong, colorful, sharp, bright woman. And I love strong women and strong men.
That's not always.
Elaine,
that's not always a good thing. But go ahead. Finish your thought.
I'm the one on the crime show when they say everybody loved her. And it's like, on my crime show, they'd be like, she was an acquired taste.
That goes for strong men, too. That's one of the things I love about Montana is these cowboys. And these guys are something else. And I love strong women, strong men, because we get one journey on this earth, and we should just, be putting our best efforts and evolving forward while we got those days. And I kind of have little sympathy for wimpy women and wimpy men,
And you know what? Not to put too fine a point on it, but I'm with you.
But we have a country that's expanding its population of wimpy women and wimpy men,
Well, and moreover than that, fearful. We are promoting fear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fearful. Yep. Afraid they're going to get canceled. Well, if anybody should be canceled, it's me, but, go for it. I'm not ever going to be canceled. We can't let people do this to our individual lives and our individual liberties and whatnot, but we are.
It's definitely disheartening. To see a lot of this stuff just breeze right through without much opposition.
And the hard part is if people want to fight it, we've got to do it to be smart. Otherwise, we're just, sound and fury signifying nothing, that whole situation. Quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Elaine Willman, and some other snazzy advice for you, I'm sure, on the backside of this this little commercial.
Oh, you always do. Yeah, not a problem.
We're going to let Bill lead the advice. Over there taking pot shots. You're listening to We the People. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
pushing me around, but I stand my ground and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground and I won't back down.
There. I was going to play Maneater, but that seemed a little over the top. Although I would have enjoyed it. Okay, I posted your severely wounded American Eagle on the site, so that's all on there up for
good.
Folks.
If oh, good.
You want to refresh your pages.
Oh, good. You know, one of my favorite songs is quoted in there, Leonard Cohen's Democracy. There's a line in his song where he says, I love this country, but I can't stand the scene. and that's exactly where I'm at. I love this country. Never had a hometown or a home state, but I have a home country, and I love this country. But I sure can't stand the scene that's going on right now.
At least you have half the country who, well, I don't know, you pretty have the whole country. Everybody's just mad about different things.
Yeah. Yeah, mad and fear. There was there was an astronaut giving a report on the landing of the rover on Mars, the Perseverance that's on Mars now, and he was being interviewed, and he was asked if he thought the space program, restarting and getting reinvigorating the space program, was good for America or good for our people, and would our people support it? And his answer was yes. He said when the we landed the man on the moon, that just bonded all of humanity in that moment. It just brought the whole world together when we landed the man on the moon, and that space exploration is part of the awe and wonder of our human minds. And he said, we really need to get back to awe and wonder as opposed to fear. And, you know, this country is getting strangled by fear. When we're fearful, we're not thinking straight. We're just cowering and caving. And I thought that was a really good point he was making. We're not aspiring to greater things. It's been a long time. You know, now
people get afraid. They're kind of easier to control. And nothing good really happens there. People don't make their best decisions either. They do stupid stuff.
Yeah, well, look what they've done with this COVID, shutting down the whole country. Everybody's just terrified. You got to wear your mask. You got to fear everybody. We have spread fear so far and wide across this country when we've had plagues and flus since man. And we're the most evolved country in the world. We should be able to handle this based on our personal responsibilities and, you know, common sense. But, oh, no, it's been weaponized as a tool to just implant fear and shut down the economy. And you know, it's
really interesting, though, you know, as soon as they start coming at me with stuff that's just too much, you know, really over the top and look out. Wait a second. What are you pitching? Well, it's interesting because the first thing we all saw was how the statistics were changing. You know, first we were talking about one thing, then we're talking about another thing, and every time it wasn't really on trajectory as they predicted, we changed the topic. Well, there's a commercial running. I'm sure it's a public service announcement. We're going to use that term loosely. It plays at night that I keep hearing, and the guy talks about, wow, you know, when you're out there, you want to wear your mask and help other people by doing it, and and then you got to get your shot, you know, get in line and get your shot. Well, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. The guy never talks about washing your hands anymore. And that was always part of his shtick a few months ago. You had to wear your mask. You had to stay away from people. Wear your mask, stay away from people, and wash your hands. Yeah. And now it's interesting. Now, I guess we can only do three things at a time because now we're supposed to wear our mask, stay away from everybody, and get a shot. But I guess your hands can be, you know, gross and dirty.
Yeah.
Because they don't, I guess your hands don't spread germs anymore.
Well, we'll slowly phase all this out, and we'll find a different thing to be afraid of.
But I'm wondering what the next thing is that they're going to add, because I'm seeing it change. It
China's figured that out. I just, you know, this is about controlling populations and spreading fear. China is now requiring anybody coming into China to have an anal swab.
Well, that's an incentive.
Yeah, well, what is that going to do to the Olympics in Beijing? Who's going to fly over there and say, oh, gosh, I want to go to the Olympics, so I'll bend over.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. All the jokes about bending over, they were all real.
Yeah, but you know what? That's a government humiliating people. That's what it's doing. And they're saying, oh, that's the most effective test. But that is a government taking complete control of a human being and adding humiliation.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's disgusting.
Yeah, never.
I don't care if it's a better test.
Yeah, that's. Well, I'm sorry, where do we do all that? I have a lot of questions. A lot of questions, none of them I ever intend to answer in person.
It's gonna spawn a whole new industry, so let's just leave it at that.
And the jokes are going to be endless. Yeah, wow. Well, I mean, apparently there's a lot to... Never mind, I'm just going to go down the booty bumping trail. If you don't know what that is, you should look that up. They're doing booty bumping kits. So you get free needles, free syringes, and a booty bumping kit. And just in case you thought that was like some sort of like hip-hop dance move you were going to get coached on, it's not. It's not. It involves methamphetamines and the thing about the swab bending over, blah, blah, blah.
Really?
Yeah, if you want to... Exactly, that's what I said.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there's a lot of... We've gone down a bad road. We need to get back and go to work and, you know, rake leaves and... I don't know. Maybe that's why people don't have yards anymore. They don't want anybody to waste all their time raking leaves. They want them to be out there where they can get them to do things like this. Ew.
We continually lower the standards. We just continually lower and remove and the standards into where... You know, every little weird and wild thing becomes the new trend.
Yeah, it's the new, the new normal, as they say.
Yeah, and we don't have those values. I mean, just fundamental values of kindness towards others and minding your own business and please and thank you and respect for each other. That's becoming kind of a unnecessary part of it, you know. Now it's the outrageous, the most outrageous, the most trendy, you know?
Yeah. Well, we need to stop normalizing that because it's kind of teaching people that there are no limits. And then they, they fall for anything.
Yeah.
So I look at the work that you've done. I remember a long time ago and you had told us, you said, that when we are tribalizing our country... And splitting everyone into all these groups, we're doing the exact opposite of what we do abroad, which is go to countries that have tribal. Tell people that again, because that was a long time ago.
Well, we'll shed our American blood to bring democracy to corrupt countries with tribalism. We'll send our soldiers over there to help them have democracy. We've done that for decades, but we'll spread tribalism here. You know, and the way this spreads is not a big leap from collectivism on Indian reservations to some wackos in Seattle saying, hey, we're going to have an autonomous zone here. Or the folks in Minneapolis saying, hey, we can take over downtown Minneapolis. It's ours. Or what was mentioned earlier about a couple of cultures growing massive dope in Northern California. When you have one culture that has its own little space and place and collectivism, that's noticed and observed and replicated by other forces that are, look at Portland, Oregon. You know? Those are elements of tribalism and collectivism that have nothing to do with our federal and state principles and laws. But these groups are saying, hey, we can take our piece of the pie. No problem. There's no consequence. What's the consequence for Seattle or Portland or Minneapolis? You know, or those dope growers in Northern California. There are no consequences.
No, and if you're big enough and you're scary enough, and that that seems to be the criteria, which is such a bad precedent. You know, if you're heavily armed and hard to control and people might get hurt, then everybody kind of probably better stand back on that one.
Another large one that I sometimes chew on that bothers me a lot is that I remember, now I'm going to give away my age. I'm going to turn 78 this year, and I have three great-grandchildren, and I'm really proud of every year and every day and all my family. But I remember being raised in a time where, my God, if you told a lie, get your mouth washed out with soap, there was a serious consequence. Privately in your family or in your school or in your government, if you told a lie, you were toast. And now all of our politics is a big ongoing, and mainstream media is an ongoing lie.
And you can get away with it if you do it all fast enough.
Yeah.
Remember when we were kids? If you told a lie, the whole show stopped.
Oh, absolutely.
And the spotlight came out. And you were, burned like ants with a magnifying glass. And now, you know, the lying is just kind of part of the...
You're rewarded.
Yeah.
And that is the history of advancement in the tribal government, too. Whatever you can lie to and steal and get from the white man will get you promoted in the tribal government.
Oh.
You know? Yeah.
It's an interesting strategy, but apparently it's working.
In the collectivism, that's how the ruling families came into their rule. Whatever you could get away with was rewarded in advancement in the political control of the collective.
Mm.
You know?
That's very interesting, because that's really kind of a national concept with Russia and China, too.
Yeah.
We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I definitely want to, let's not lose that thread. And talk a little bit about the collectivism when we come back, because I'm not sure that everybody's necessarily on the same page with that, and it's an important concept that we should be looking at with the backdrop of everything that's going on. So let's see. We're here with Elaine Willman. We're chatting at We the People Radio here at KCNR. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's our time to take a stand. Remember who we are.
Remember who we are.
There's a call across this land. Remember who we are.
Remember who we are.
We were a city.
Just in case you thought this was going to be one of those programs where it all ends with, you know, life sucks and then you die. No! It's not the point.
That was a great song. Great song.
It's one of those that is so... I really ought to look it up. I don't know when she wrote it, but Krista Branch. But it's very, very... This seems perfect for this time.
Very fitting right now.
Very fitting. And you know, it's interesting, too... we used to, we were laughing on the break, of course, because that's what we do. But the memes that have come out have been very, very telling. I kind of collect them all because they're just, I think maybe one day I'll, I don't know, put them all in one of those little, you know, you can order little books with all your own pictures. I think I might put them all in there because when you load memes in your phone, they go in the order that you receive them. So as you scroll through these, you're really looking at the history of our political theater, as it were.
Yeah,
with all the jokes. But lately, Blazing Saddles has been the meme of choice. And so any of us that are old, we all saw Blazing Saddles. Mm-hmm. But like there was one, Blazing Saddles has been edited for TV. It will air tonight from 8 o'clock to 8:07. And it is
exactly.
Like, but the thing is, we used to work out a lot of our, you know, angst through humor, through debate.
Yes.
And humor. And, you know, we kind of, you know, we joked about things.
We made fun of it. We made fun of some of these ridiculous ideas. But, boy, you make fun of it now. You're canceled.
There is no humor.
No, there's no humor.
Yeah, that's why I don't like the way it goes now. It's not funny at all. And not everything is funny. However, if we can kind of see the humor in something, then, you know, everyone can learn a little bit, move forward. But that's kind of the first thing that they set their sights on. You know, let's make sure nobody gets to laugh about anything. Remember the Charlie Hebdo cartoon? You know, you're allowed.
Yeah.
No, there will be no humor.
Yeah.
It's been
Years ago, I used to do counseling. It was women counseling, addiction counseling, recovery from addiction counseling. And one of the things that psychologists and counselors look for with somebody who's just terribly depressed is, you know, you've gained some ground, or they're on the road to recovery when you hear them laugh. Because under depression, there is no humor. There is no perspective. And humor is the balance. It is the antidote to depression.
Mm-hmm.
And see, we're getting, humor is really taking a bad name now. You know, if you laugh at something, well, you're just not taking it seriously, and you're
right.
Just cool. You know what I mean?
Well,
my son,
I don't think people are very smart when they're, you know, when they're so jammed up and angry. I mean,
yeah.
Make people laugh a little bit, and it's like they lighten up, and then you can see things a little bit better.
Yeah. Here's one for Bill. Bill, here's a little one for you. Let's see if you get this. Did you hear about the guy that sold his homing pigeon on eBay 8 times?
Smart man.
Isn't that great? That is the only joke I've heard in months. You know what I mean?
Oh. I need to start sending you some of my memes.
Oh, yeah. My son is his own only person, but he's told me this several times. These are his things. I don't know where he didn't get them from me, but I love them. He says, there's only four things in my life, Mom. It either has to make me money, make me learn, make me happy, or make me laugh. He says, only four things in my life. If it doesn't have one of those four things, I don't need it. You know what I mean?
That's pretty good.
God bless him.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was kind of joking, you know, on the thing about the whole cancel culture. There's another meme. I'll put it on the page. It's funny. It's got Mr. Potato Head talking to a coffee pot, the Mr. Coffee, and the caption above it is, you're next.
True.
It is true. I mean, it's stupid, but it's true. I mean, I guess if you can recognize that, you go, really, what are we doing? All right, so back to collectivism, just in case people out there are going, God, she's all over the place. Rabbit trailer, what the heck? But no, I didn't forget. Talk about collectivism, because it's a really important concept that I'm not sure we really learn along the way.
Well, the fundamentals of collectivism is that the importance of the group is superior to the importance of the individual, or the needs of the group are more important than the needs of an individual. So it's all about a group, any group, that thinks that the best interest of the group is the highest principle. And those participants in the group fall below that level. Their individual needs are less important than the needs of a group. And that's what tribal government and collectivism is on the Indian reservation. And it's the same thing with But the countries where the, you know, where there is no individual liberty or freedom or significance, no personal aspirations or personal rights, then that's what we have with our inalienable rights in the Constitution. They're gone on Indian reservations, and they're leaving us across the country. We're all becoming Indians under the what I call President Biden, Joe Biden. He's not Biden to me. He's Joe Biden.
Like
you know,
that.
We're losing our rights under that. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's basically the difference between my end. You know, the republic form of government is bottom up. Well, of course, we are currently upside down, but we the people control our government. Well, it's been just ages since that's been true, but that's the principle.
No, but I think more and more people are realizing the importance of that. And starting to get more involved and starting to pay attention to what's important. And by letting our government just run itself, this is what we end up with.
And by allowing us to be silenced.
Right.
Exactly. And these federal shutdowns, that's a form of promoting collectivism. That's a form of it. Saying, we know what's best for you. We, the collective, know what's best for you, the individual. It's a form of it.
Sure. Sure.
I wonder, what can the people do that are trapped under that? Like, it's probably been 5 years since we spoke with you on the tribalism idea from your first book. Has there been any meaningful change in Indian policy or anything to give these people a little bit of a break, the folks that are kind of under the thumb of a tyrannical tribal council?
Well, I will say it did not get worse under the Trump administration. Under the Obama administration, he had tribal leaders from across the country come into the White House every year, and he was throwing one thing after another, giving them all kinds of tribal perks and more advantages. Trump never held an annual conference of tribal leaders in the White House in his 4 years. He left them alone, but he didn't do more for them. So we kind of maintained. It's not, my guess is that Biden is going to be replicating or listening to or doing whatever Obama tells him, and that we're going to be going back to that. So I think we're coming into a time period where the tribes are all pounding on the door with Biden, and he's going to give them whatever they want. We could be in even more problems, you know. Basically, in our western states, it's water. The federal government, you know, states own the navigable waters within their state. But the federal government, using tribes and the Little Endangered Species Act or whatever, the federal government is out capturing all the waters it can in the western states. And the Biden administration will be ever so helpful with that.
And so I guess by way of, empowering people who want to do something about it, what would you suggest?
Well, one of the things that we're doing, I mean, here in Western Montana, people think differently, perhaps up here than in other places. But
a lot of extra room there. You could spread out.
Yeah. But, you know, when the controversy, the really huge controversy of the election, where there are those that absolutely know it was rigged, and there are those that don't, but most of them know it was rigged here. When there was all this controversy and turmoil surrounding the election, folks here were hunkering down. Folks here have their food stocked up for months, their ammo, their wood, whatever they need, and they have their ham radios. And folks around here are really staying in touch with each other and creating networks of neighbors helping neighbors, neighbors being able to respond to neighbors. Because in some of the rural areas, you can't see your next-door neighbor. He may have trouble at his door, and you don't know. Folks here are really getting engaged at the very local level and at the very, very local level here and starting to reach out and connect and communicate with each other because of this chaos in the country. We really were very concerned during the turmoil of the election. It's mellowed out a little bit, but we really don't know where this Biden administration is going. And some of us really envisioned a major EMP power outage for days when now everybody's got generators. I mean, we're gearing up to have to take care of ourselves and our neighbors in the Northwest.
Well,
that's really fortunate.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you're fortunate you're in a community like that, because I think there's probably more than not that are still sitting on their hands. So
well, they think it won't happen, but I think the Texas thing was kind of a clue. I mean, you had people living in apartment buildings, and you saw the gushing water and all that stuff.
In an emergency, you may not even know what your neighbor's name is, but in an emergency, they tend to help each other.
Exactly.
But it's really good to go ahead and reach out and say hello, especially in the urban areas. I know when I lived in Ventura for years and years, I didn't know who my neighbors were. I could care less. People don't talk to each other down there. but up here,
get a dog. If you walk your dog. Yeah. Everybody talks to people who are walking dogs. It's a great way to know who people are.
Everybody's got dirty pickup trucks, and every time you pass another truck on the road, you're waving at them. They're waving at each other. You know, people up here look out for each other, take care of each other, and it's kind of a comforting thing. For example, when we first moved here.
That wouldn't be a bad thing to go back to. Hold that story. We'll come right back and do that before the top of the hour. Can you believe it? This is going like... I think you're a time traveler, Elaine. I should change the name of the show. This is Time Tyranny, not American Tribal Tyranny. Something's going on. We're almost done. Can you believe it? You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
This old man and me were at the bar, and we were having us some beers and swapping night on cares, talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace, all the hell we raised. And then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
We saved the answer for the end of the show.
Heavy on the crazy.
Who's the one that picks out that beer music? I just love that.
That would be my job over here.
Oh, God, that's great.
I love that song.
Yeah.
I never get tired of it. It's funny every time. So true.
It's very true.
And it's interesting how many of the songs from our, growing up are totally different in the backdrop of today. And looking at different topics, it's always fascinating to me how music is such a... this is such a window into our society.
Yeah, thank God it endures. We always have it, and even in spite of like the rap and all the stuff that they call music today. I'm glad we have. My husband is he likes the old country music sound, and I appreciate good music. But anyway, I was going to tell you that when we moved out here, because I'd visited out here several times, when we actually made the move and we had a Penske truck and a couple of pickup trucks just loaded to the hill, and they're making that road trip from Wisconsin out to the western side of Montana. We moved here on July 4th. The trucks pulled in July. They flew me out early to to open up the house and put the food in. But the family trucks made that long trip, and they arrived here in the middle of this nowhere valley on July 4th. It was 104. And when those trucks pulled into this property, there were 45 people here ready to help them unload. And those guys had already worked a full day haying and raising cattle and hay. They'd already worked all day long. And they came out, 45 of them, to help us unload these trucks and get the stuff in the house. And then we had a big barbecue about midnight. I mean, that's
community.
That's awesome.
Isn't that
wonderful.
Isn't that community?
Yeah, you're like, I'm never leaving.
Yeah. And I just can't do enough for people like that. Yeah. I just believe in people like that, and I want to be like them. People brought us vegetables and stuff from their garden all that first year because they knew we didn't have a garden. You know, it was just completely, Montana people are really, really good. Now everybody's moving up, Californians are moving up here, and I hope they don't bring their liberal crap with them.
I was going to say.
Or their attitudes with them.
Yeah, you guys need to get to them right away and indoctrinate them before they infect your community.
We value each other here. We value our country here. And I'm sure that's true in other states like South Dakota, North Dakota, some of the other states too. But our coastal states. You know, one thing that people in high rises in the urban areas, they really need to know their next door neighbors. You get a power outage for days and you're on the 50th floor. You better know your neighbors. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you would think.
Yeah.
I think that's why all of this kind of sowing suspicion, you know, you're not wearing. Yeah. Like I can't wear a mask. I haven't worn a mask through this whole thing because I can't. Yeah, if I want to suffocate, I can do that all by myself. Yeah. I don't need to put something over my face.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So, you know, people with a lung issue, but you can't see that. So they immediately look at you like, oh, you're just. You know, I had a lady say that I was trying to. Accused me of trying to kill her.
And
I was like, well, you have your magic mask on. What the heck?
Yeah.
Jeez. I thought you were safe.
You got your mask on.
I had another response, but probably not radio worthy. But I thought, who does that? You know, so instead of looking at somebody, like my mom would always say that. My mom was really good at that. Somebody would be driving really slow or they'd not go when the light turned green and you'd be all bugged about it. My mom would always say, honey, you don't know what's going on in that person's life. Maybe something happened. Yeah. You know, she was always extending that. So I'm sure, you know, she sees somebody without a mask. Well, maybe they have a breathing problem. But we're not doing that these days. You know, now it's all just like.
My son does the reverse. He calls them sheep when he sees all these masses, especially down in California. You know, he'll go, bah. You know?
Well, that's just fun for everyone.
I know.
Actually, they even came up with a Dr. Seuss one here. I will not wear it on my face. I will not wear it any place. I will not wear it to get in. I will not wear it on my chin. I will not wear it on my ear. I will not wear it out of fear. I will not wear your stupid mask. I will not wear it. Do not ask.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, I thought, and it's got like the Cat in the Hat guy, you know, right there.
Yeah.
Boy, you know, maybe we should have some little cards printed up.
Well, you know, the bottom line is what drives me, what gets me up every morning is first, I'm just delighted to have another day at my age and stage. and I'm in excellent health. But what gets me up every morning is I tell myself, I am an American. I live in America. And free thought and free speech. And I use it or lose it. If I don't use it, I'll lose it. And these people that are not using their free thought and not speaking up, they're the ones, they're the sheep.
And who are buying into canceling other people's free thought.
Right.
You know, the thing that never...
The nervous.
Well, look at what's his name, Cuomo in New York. I mean, they're all good to bash somebody until it comes home to roost. And then it's like, so, how's that working for you?
Yeah.
It always comes around. You know, it never stays in one place. So when you're silencing people and trying to force people to do things that they shouldn't have to do as Americans, it's coming for you next.
Well, our founders created a system by which each of us can pursue our own happiness without being unkind to others, without trampling on others. I mean, that's what's in, that was the purpose, to live and let live under our Constitution.
Yeah.
And respect, mutual respect for the individual and his liberties and his freedoms.
And the goal was never that we all agree on everything and that we all had the exact same idea, actually.
No,
we were allowed to debate those ideas. And
absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, I went to a law school for a couple of years, and, you know, we used to be able to get into heated arguments.
Yeah.
Heated policy or legal arguments. And then afterwards, they wasn't that swell, you know.
Yeah.
We used to just embrace that.
But now, it's considered bad form.
Well, we have to get it back.
We have to get it back because it really makes, you know, that idea that, you know, steel sharpens steel. So when you have a debate with some other smart person, you walk away and go, I learned some stuff.
Yeah. Well, it was okay to have a difference of opinion. Walk away and have a difference of opinion and not walk away hating somebody, you know. And
not to personalize everything.
That's always the thing.
Right.
Well, we're getting here into, like, the last minute. So before we unceremoniously cut you off, and that's what always happens. And see, Bill said I was going to blow it, so now I'm not going to blow it because I'm a contrary.
You're a contrary.
if Bill says you got it, then I fumble the ball every time. But he always tells me, you're going to be late. I'm like, oh, definitely not going to be late for that. He doesn't use that one enough, though. But we thank you for coming on with us. And your book, American Tribal Tyranny, looks awesome. I would encourage people to read also Slumbering Thunder and Going to Pieces, because I think it'll broaden people's knowledge on what's going on out there and what we're doing as a country. Thanks a lot, Elaine.
Aaron, go ahead and give your listeners my email. I welcome email questions or phone number. I don't have a phone number and email.
It's right on there on the website. It's toppin@aol.com, and it's Elaine Willman. She's on with us March 7th, 2021. Thanks a million.
Thank you, Elaine.
You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
We wish we could. Oh, no, there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.